Good morning, Chair Emerson, members of the board, State Forest Authority. My name is Doug Graff, and I serve as the Chief of Fire Protection for the Oregon Department of Forestry. I'm currently on assignment as the Agency Initiative Coordinator, which is a topic of our discussion today. And I'll be providing an informational today, as noted prior, for discussion with the board. State Forest Authority has highlighted our effort on the agency initiative at your January and March meetings during his opening remarks. You have in your packet a staff report providing a summary of the agency initiative development to date, its content and background, and a timeline highlighting the agency initiative proposal will be presented at your June 6th meeting for final consideration by the board at your July 24th meeting for inclusion of the 2019-21 agency request budget. In today's presentation, we'll walk through the problem statement and we'll focus much of our attention there, highlighting the challenges facing the agency as we experience increasingly numbers of large fires across Oregon's landscape. I'll provide what the data is telling us on how this agency is responding to this increasing workload, and we'll present a draft framework for the agency initiative to address this complex issue. We do have 1 hour today on the agenda, and I'll leave time at the end of the presentation for discussion, feedback, and guidance. However, please feel free along the way to ask any questions. And unlike your typical fire season briefings, I'll provide some tactical pauses for you to absorb the data as this is your first time observing it. And we'll be looking for questions along the way.
We'll watch out for those tactical
pauses. It's a new environment for me personally. I'm not used to being here outside of fire season. Okay, the problem statement we're addressing with the agency initiative is very clear. Oregon has experienced an increased severity, complexity, and duration of fire seasons, which has challenged ODF's ability to respond to the wildfire workload. And key to this conversation is and sustain its other core businesses while proactively protecting Oregonians, forests, and communities from wildfire. To address this challenge, the agency has described as working on one agency initiative, a policy option package, which is FTE, and funding for possible inclusion in the 2019-21 request budget. We are anchoring this work into two efforts, the Fire Program Review and the Secretary of State, which are both in your packets today. The Fire Program Review was a comprehensive assessment of the fire protection program work of the agency. I'm sorry, it was a fire protection program including large fire funding, sustainable organization, which has influenced much of the agency initiative and policy work. Seven legislators participated in the Fire Program Review, along with the Governor's Office, members of the Board of Forestry, Chief Financial Office, Legislative Fiscal Office, landowner partners, and cooperators participated in this effort with the intent to help shape the future of wildfire protection for Oregon. Many of the recommendations from this effort are in the implementation phase currently. The BLM financial study and its resulting influence on the new protection agreement targeted to begin July 1, 2018 is one example. Our smoke management rules revision, which will be before the board in June for consideration, and continued engagement with the U.S. Forest Service on federal lands such as implementation of the GNA are all outcomes consistent with the Fire Program Review. Also, the Secretary of State was conducted, and this is a third-party audit of the agency with a focus on agency sustainability. This report highlights that the department is increasingly spending more time fighting fires than we are in other agency programs. It notes that overtime has increased by 197% over the 3 years of that study, 13, 14, and 15 fire seasons, and recommends the department take action to reduce the strain on our employees. As Peter stated in his opening remarks in March, the 2017 fire season has reinforced what we already knew from the Secretary of State and the Fire Program Review. We do not have a sustainable organization for these kinds of fire seasons, and this challenge is exactly what the agency initiative aims to address. Communication to date on considering a policy option package for the 2019-21 budget has been robust. This winter, Peter and I met with the Governor's Office, Speaker of the House, Senate President, co-chairs of Ways and Means, legislators who participated in the Fire Program Review to share our interests in bringing forward a response to Oregon's increasingly complex fire seasons. All of these discussions were met with no surprises. And it was expected that the agency, with the primary mission of wildfire protection in the state, would be at the table with considerations to address this issue. The agency has met with our landowner and operator partners, key stakeholders, including a conservation community group, cooperators, and other state agency partners. All of this outreach is helping to shape the initiative. So a little detail on the problem statement. And we'll look at acres burned across ODF-protected lands over three decades. And we'll be speaking today across decades, and I'll be referencing what the system looks like and the data tells us across these decades. We have experienced a significant change in the average acres burned over the past three decades on ODF protection. This graph highlights our 16 million acres of fire protection responsibility of private and public forest land and grazing land. This represents approximately half of the forest land in the state, with the U.S. Forest Service protection responsibility approximately the other half of the forest land within the state. As you can see, the average ODF acres protected burn two decades ago was at 14,300 acres burned. The next decade, we had an increase of 84% to 26,300 acres burned across that decade. And in the current decade, we see another 29% increase. We're sitting at 33,900 acres burned on ODF-protected lands. And with this over doubling of acres burned comes significant resource loss to the landowners that we serve and increased protection costs. This does not account for the losses absorbed by those landowners, which can often be 10 times the cost of suppression. We have seen our 10-year average of suppression costs more than double during this time frame, as you would expect. From $8 million in large fire costs to $34 million in gross large fire costs, with peaks to over $120 million in 2013. The Secretary of State audit highlighted that the number of financial transactions increased from 40,000 transactions to over 100,000 financial transactions through this agency, yet the same number of finance staff are available to meet this new workload as existed a decade ago. Bottom line, increasing the fire workload impacts all aspects of the agency's core businesses, and the finance implications I just highlighted are just one example to recognize at this time, and we'll expand the conversation as we move forward. Any questions on the acres burned here for ODF? There's your tactical pause.
Micropause.
Micropause. Let's look at all acres burned across all jurisdictional responsibility in the state of Oregon, recognizing that ODF protects only a portion of the landscape across Oregon that receives wildfires. And you'll see a similar trend here. All jurisdictions include U.S. Forest Service, BLM, Bureau of Land Management, our Rangeland Fire Protective Associations, National Park Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the tribes, and ODF's data is also incorporated in this slide. 3 decades ago, average acres burned in Oregon was 156,000 acres. We increased 116% the next decade to 337,000 acres, and again a 34% increase to the current decade. These are 10 years back from 17. 452,000 acres burned within the state of Oregon. I highlighted that this includes ODF data. To reference, our 33,900 acres burned in this current decade compared to the 452,000 acres burned. We account for 7.5%, if you're doing the math on that one. Some of you, I noted, occur on ODF protection. In contrast, we respond to 1,000 wildfires that occur within the state of Oregon. The totality of all jurisdictions is 2,500 fires in the state of Oregon, where we respond to 40% of the fires. I stress that to reflect a little bit on the effectiveness of the complete and coordinated fire protection system for Oregon that we have with our system. There are a number of reasons for the increased acres with other jurisdictions. Range fires tend to drive acres burned, such as in 2012 when we first experienced the drought conditions in southeast Oregon, and we saw over 1 million acres burned in southeast Oregon as the drought condition developed. Also, ODF protection includes where people live and work on private and public lands, and our mission is clear. We minimize size, suppression costs, resource loss on our fires, and of growing concern to protect Oregonians from wildfire, given that we have protection responsibility for over 2 million acres within the wildland-urban interface. I think it's critical to this discussion to understand that all fires outside of our protection responsibility impact our agency's workload also, not just the 33,900 acres that we burn on our protection responsibility, but the 452,000 acres burning across Oregon. For example, Jones Fire, North Umpqua, High Cascades that did not burn on ODF protection were all fires on the landscape for much of last summer that threatened our jurisdictional responsibility. Therefore, we are engaged daily with leadership at the district level and landowner resources on the ground, preparing control lines on private lands and public lands that we protect if the fire moved off of other jurisdictions. On threat fires like these, we integrate with the interagency management teams in charge of the fire by providing division group supervisors, task force leaders, air support, and often are assigned entire branches or one side of the fire that threatens our ODF-protected lands. When Oregon experiences catastrophic wildfires outside of our protection boundaries, there exists a significant drawdown on resources and increased workload to the department. There is also a growing impact to all Oregonians for this increase in fire across the landscape. One of the greatest examples is last year in 2017, our air quality, with much of the state's population centers experiencing extremely poor air quality for much of the summer. Oregon Tourism is close to completing a report on the full impacts of the Oregon's economy from last year, and I hope to report out on these results at our next meeting in June. Notable event cancellations included the Shakespeare Festival, Cycle Oregon, Sisters Folk Festival. Additionally, transportation routes were closed. 10,000 homes were evacuated, and I would highlight with no civilian fatalities as we did experience in California last year. Long-term effects including popular recreation sites as impacted from the Eagle Creek fires, threats to our critical watersheds, and 353 high school sporting events were canceled, with the majority of that due to poor air quality last year. So catastrophic wildfire, as it is, increases, has impacts to all Oregonians and our economy, our resources, not just the agency. The national trend for acres burned in wildfire is the same trend that has occurred in this experience here across the decades. Two decades ago, nationally, we had 3.3 million acres burned. This current decade, we're at 6.6 million acres burned as a 10-year average across the past decades. So again, we've seen a doubling of the acres burned across the nation. And I'll highlight that a point again as we discuss expansion of our workload in the off-seasons to assist our other agencies who are also experiencing fires. Any questions on the broader scope, the data around catastrophic numbers across all jurisdictions? I often spend a fair bit of time during fire season trying to make that distinction. Numbers of fires on the landscape impacted us compared to all jurisdictions, so it's important to understand that nuance. I'd like to bring it back now to fire protection responsibility on ODF-protected lands and its impacts on the agency's sustainability to further understand the problem statement. This chart shows that our primary challenge is not initial attack. Our initial attack success remains highly effective. Our 12 district budgets have adjusted accordingly to provide for an adequate level of protection as presented annually before the board in June. This slide highlights that the last 10 years of our initial attack success, which averages 95%, again, we experience, given the complexity of fires, with over 1,000 fires on ODF protection land, we keep 95% of the fires at 10 acres or less. That's highly successful and effective at the initial attack level. We rely on a broad range of landowner, contractor, and cooperator agreements, and this system remains highly effective. The graph also shows, as we decrease effectiveness in our percent of catching fires at 10 acres or less, cost goes up. At 93% in 2014, suppression costs were at $74 million, and at 94% effectiveness, you can see the average of 2017 and 13 fires at just over $80 million. So a direct correlation that large fires across the landscape are our challenge. It is the large fires that add strain on the agency and, as discussed earlier, have significant impacts to all Oregonians. These are the ones we hear about on the news. In 2013, fires included the Douglas Complex and Government Flats. In 2014, 36 Pit Fire and Oregon Gulch. In 2015, Stouch Creek and Canyon Creek Complex. In 2016, Akawana and Gold Canyon. In 2017, Millie and Chetco Bar. I bring up the names of these fires not to trigger deep sighs from agency staff behind me who spent much of their summers on these fires, but to recognize that all these fires were FEMA-eligible fires. which brings three salient points to the discussion. One, we are experiencing larger and more complex urban interface fires that pose significant threat to public safety, as eligibility for a FEMA fire requires immediate threat to 100 homes or more. This represents an entirely new scale of financial tracking and cost recovery workload to the agency that we are not built, have not been built for. Three, that we have never experienced, that we have experienced at least two FEMA eligible fires annually since 2013, with peaks in 2015 at six FEMA eligible fires. And we're well over 20 eligible FEMA fires over this five-year period. The bottom line is the issue we must address now and into the future is how will this agency organize to meet all of its program's missions? And we do not see this as a base budget initial attack issue, but as a large fire support issue. Which leads us to a general fund request focus on our policy option package, which I'll detail on the final slide. Definitely out of briefing mode. I would be much more succinct in briefing mode. any questions at this point as I move into how we respond to large fires? We do this through an all-hands-on-deck approach to firefighting known as a militia concept that recognizes that every employee in ODF has a role and responsibility to respond to fires or support the firework as stated in their position descriptions. This graphic shows how ODF responds to large fires through incident management teams is our vehicle. You can see the distribution of membership on our incident management teams, which is 100 personnel, so three teams of approximately 33 people, from protection at 37%, in both of these years defined state forest, private forest, and grouped all other programs under admin services. I think the first thing to note here is that our incident management teams require participation from all programs to be successful. The second thing to note is that fire protection engagement in our incident management teams, the participation, the percent of staff on our incident management teams remains steady across the years at 37%, and I've looked at this a number of different years, and it's generally consistent. And there's a clear reason for that, is because we prioritize initial attack, and fire protection staff are often required to stay at their home districts to provide for adequate level of protection for initial attack readiness. Ensuring initial attack will always be our primary focus when considering how we support large fires. We certainly would not move all of our firefighters, for example, from Eastern Oregon to a large fire in Western Oregon and leave that door open for initial attack. Finally, I would note the dramatic change in percentage of state forest employees participating on incident management teams, which is directly related to the significant decrease in the number of state forest employees currently employed with this agency, so moving from 44% participation to 29%. State Forest currently operates with 191 full-time equivalents. That is down 10 years ago from 277 FTE, which is a decrease in 86 full-time equivalents in this program alone. Nine of these reductions came from the Elliott State Forest in the past several years, where ODF no longer manages this forest. The remainder has been a result of State Forest gaining efficiencies in their business operations and deferring workloads to maintain financial viability. Private Force is obviously picking up the Lodge Fire workload on our incident management teams, but they are also down 6 full-time equivalents from 10 years ago. They currently operate at 110 full-time equivalents, and they peaked in the early 90s with 132 full-time equivalents within that program. Bottom line, it takes the entire agency to prepare and respond to the wildfire workload. We have experienced an increased workload in fire, and we have been doing this with less people than we have in the past decade. One outcome of this reality is, although we have 3 teams rostered here in 2018 and on rotation, we will only be able to support 2 incident management teams this year for deployments, as there are several key vacancies within the rosters of our incident management teams. Any questions on Lodge Fire? I stumbled a little bit on the prioritization of initial attack in Lodge Fires. Did that come across clear in terms of the protection, many of the protection employees needing to stay home? Okay. And thus the reliance on the other programs for Lodge Fire support. This slide is perhaps the most intriguing, and I credit the Secretary of State audit for initiating this work, and we've expanded the data to incorporate up and through 2017. As highlighted in the Secretary of State, more ODF employees are spending more hours responding to fires. The blue color here represents regular hours spent coded to fire protection from ODF employees across all programs by month from years 2009 to 2017. The yellow color denotes the overtime hours spent from all ODF employees coded to fire protection over that same time period. Regular time hours prior to 2013 averaged 62,170 regular hours per month. 2013 forward, we increased that to 64,781 regular hours. This is an increase of 2,611 hours per month per year, or 15 FTE when I do the calculations. How many more FTE working on fire? Overtime hours prior to 13 were at 7,418, and we are now at 13,834 per month. This is an increase of 6,416 hours, or 36 FTE, coded to fire. What this does not show is the management services who are not coding overtime hours to fire. For example, speaking and looking at key leadership on the hours worked during fire season, it's not, wouldn't be unexpected to put in 400 hours, which is more than double the standard monthly workload, and that's 13.3 hours a day, 7 days a week on average. So the overtime components, obviously not coded for management when not deployed to fire seasons, is not reflected in this also. And that's significant through the ranks here in Salem and, of course, at the field level. This is clearly not a sustainable approach to addressing the challenges. I'd also emphasize at this scale of the photo, what does not become clearly apparent is the width of these peaks. The peaks are very clear, but we are spending more time on the fires during the shoulder seasons in the spring and the fall. You can see overtime showing up a little bit more here as you look at the gaps here between the peaks in yellow. This is a reflection of both shoulder season fires we have experienced in Oregon and our support to other states as our California deployments last winter. 60 people were deployed, returning home just the day before Christmas. And currently we have 6 employees deployed to Texas, Oklahoma, and Florida. And I recall, I think it was 2014 over the winter, we had 3 Type 3 incident management teams operating within the state of Oregon on fires when the drought conditions really peaked between 14 and 15 fire seasons. And we didn't see a slowdown to the extent that we are typical within these years. Bottom line, we are truly spending more time in the fire program as an agency and not in a sustainable fashion, particularly as you look at overtime hours. Of interest, this slide shows ODF has a fire borrowing problem themselves, similar to those who have been close with the U.S. Forest Service fire borrowing issue that was fixed, hopefully, here in the omnibus bill. U.S. Forest Service borrowed dollars from its other programs to pay for fire suppression costs. ODF is borrowing people and time from other programs to fight its fires while experiencing extreme overtime hours worked and great stress on the agency to meet all of its agency missions.
Question on the data.
Yes.
So looking at the acres burned 2016, which we had a little reprieve there, and overlaying the 2016 regular hour overtime hours, it appears we still, not as great, but we still experienced a higher than previous, I guess, 5 years number of overtime hours. And so is there something else going on too that would contribute to that given the limited number of acres?
Yeah, I reflected on that, and I think there's a number of factors there. To judge the workload based on acres burned alone doesn't tell the whole story. The complexity of fires as they reach the urban interface, for example, requires a lot more attention as we engage in a more complex condition. I would also highlight that we were moving out of the drought conditions at that time, but still lingered and never did go away and showed up later in 2017, that fires took more energy to maintain at that smaller acreage. Also, you have to look at east side and west side, depending on acres burned. The attention and effort necessary to contain a fire at, say, 200 acres on the west side looks much different than on the west side, on the east side. So all of those factors play in. But this did surprise me. I was expecting this to be less. When we run the data for 16 and 17, but it was higher than expected. Because we did add the 16 and 17 years from the Secretary of State data.
Doug or Peter, do we know what the implications of those 5 years of additional overtime are on the PERS liabilities? If you've got retirements happening after 3 of these years, aren't they then getting much higher retirement payments as a result of that?
Yes, yeah, so the question is, PERS is based retirements on your last 3 years of average salary, so folks would have seen a boost there. I don't have the data to show that we've engaged with more retirements or not. I don't know the answer to that question.
But it's possible.
It's possible.
That this is also contributing to an increase.
Somebody considering to retire in 17 or 16 and their salary increase that
right.
perhaps could have influenced a decision.
You're asking, is it going to be increasing our average PERS cost and contribution? And I don't. We haven't done that analysis. We I don't know if we can look at that or not.
That. Okay.
One of the things that Doug hasn't talked about is really the impact on our employees with this kind of a workload. because we're doing it with less employees and we're literally burning out the asset that we say is our most important asset. I mean, you have to take people's cell phone away and tell them to go away, because that's the way our staff is, but it's not a pleasant experience to see how we look at the end of a fire season.
Doug, I have a big picture question. So it looks like the information here is from the audit and everything around 2016, and then there's the fire program review committee that has recommendations that were interesting. And so the way I read this is that in 2016 there was, you know, an analysis done, and that you at the department said, yeah, we need a little more data, like, to show how we know that this militia response is really stressing our staff. And we are getting, and it looks like you were in the process of getting a lot of data to sort of really show how this is stressing this, and it's not stressing the staff, and it's not sustainable. It sounds like you have all of that information now. It's what I'm hearing, and so now you have this policy option package that you're developing, and the board's going to approve in June. The question I have is that policy option package going to essentially say the militia response isn't working anymore, given the fact that we have really large fires, and we're going to need more resources. And so the state has to figure out, respectfully, the state needs to help us figure out how to do this in a way that's sustainable for the agency and for Oregonians as a whole to make sure everybody's still safe.
Yeah.
Does that mean that the POP is going to link to this 2015-2016 Fire Program Review Committee recommendation, which has some ideas of how to raise money and other things, or are you reaching beyond that since it's been a couple of years for that piece, or am I reading that wrong?
Yeah, I'll try to bring that all together. I see this as an and. Because of the work of the Fire Program Review, Secretary of State, this prompted an agency initiative to address capacity internally within the agency, and we need to seek opportunities outside these walls to address this increasingly complex condition across the entire landscape here for Oregon. So definitely additive. There are broader components in the Fire Program Review and the Secretary of State that cannot be lost in this conversation. This is the agency's first opportunity to produce a policy option package to consider those recommendations, so FTE and funding, which is specific to the sustainable organization component of the Fire Program Review. Broader conversations around legislative concepts could be brought in through the governor's office and otherwise. So we certainly cannot lose the whole conversation from the Fire Program Review. And I did highlight some of the critical components and recommendations from the Fire Program Review that are currently ongoing: the smoke management, the investments on federal lands, and the BLM components I saw as priorities to engage work there. But addressing the capacity needs and internally and externally for the agency is an important conversation, and that was very important to key landowner interests to ensure that we're looking outside the walls to support this effort.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking that is that it seemed like the audit and the review was very good for internal. The Fire Program Review Committee report seemed broader and really the place where I felt like you could get your arms around real solutions to support not only our agency but the broader context. So it talks about wildland-urban interface in even more depth. It talks about ways to raise more money. That was sort of, it's curious about that we're talking internally about a POP, about an issue that quickly gets beyond our agency as well. And so
Yeah, I think that's a great observation, and the conversation needs to be broader. That's why I say an and.
Yeah.
So this issue and all the other challenge issues, recommendations brought up before the fire program review. And I will speak to when I highlight two more slides on the agency initiative framework, thoughts around the necessity to think differently in terms of how are we mitigating the risk proactively across resilient landscapes and fire-adapted communities, and not only in the response component of our responsibility, which is typically where funds tend to be guided towards in this profession.
Yeah, and when you get to that, I was thinking a little bit about this, the Secretary of State's report, which sort of addresses a lot of the militia concept, but it strikes me in looking ahead to the numbers that it's not really getting rid of the initial the militia concept altogether. It seems to be beefing this up. Beefing the militia up a bit rather than a wholesale change and reflecting the fact that the militia has diminished in size due to the actions taken in some of the other program areas within the department.
Thank you, Tom.
I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And then there are a whole set of other issues that are actually... not all budgetary. A lot of them are, but not all of them budgetary as well. So this is kind of the first budget crack at addressing some of these issues to enhance our ability to deal with what seems to be a continuing high level of large fires. But it's not changing the world around this at this point.
Thank you, Tom, for bringing that. I missed that nuance. And to reflect on that just another moment is you're exactly right on your assessment. And I would emphasize the importance of maintaining the militia concept is at core to the success of this agency over 100 years. And the expressed framework for investments in FTE seeks to maintain that concept within this agency. It's frankly the envy of my counterparts when I look across the state at how we engage with fires. Having it in the position description for all programs to participate, you see that waning in other designs, and we don't want to lose that.
That's a good point.
Yeah. The next slide looks at our legislative adopted budget, FTE over time, dating back to the early 80s. And you can see this agency has typically ranged between 800 and 900 FTE across these decades. And we fluctuated between that. We're currently at 867 FTE, and we've experienced peaks on our full-time equivalents FTE to close to 1,000 in 07-09 and 81-83. In the current 10-year period, we have held relatively steady in the range of 850 FTE. And the previous decade, considering a decade review, we were in the close to 900 range for FTE across that decade of biennium. And then prior to that, you see we have a dip. I think the bottom line, this graph affirms to me that we've not adjusted our full-time equivalents to meet the growing demands of wildfire over the past few biennium. So let's talk about the agency initiative framework, where we are at to date with our efforts and conversations on the topic, which is a policy option package for FTE and protection system investments. of $12 million, considering 55 FTE. And I'll discuss in more detail the categories. $5.6 million of additional severity. Back to the FIA program review, a component of the review was severity resources, and consistent with the 2013 Wildfire Protection Act, which added severity. $4.2 million is a replacement, one-time purchase of our aircraft. We just sold this spring the Cessna 414. $22.1 million, a training, and $1.5 million for a Type 2 initial attack agency crew, for a total of $25.4 million total request. Frankly, this is a very significant request, consideration for general fund by this agency. I'm assuming this is unprecedented. This framework was built off of the work of the FIA program review, the Sustainable Organization Working Group specifically, and the Secretary of State audit, and our experience up and through the 2017 FIA seasons, unencumbered by the reality of limited funds. And I think it's important to recognize that. We wanted to look at where the pressure points are and solutions at a budgetary level to address sustainability and getting ahead of the power curve for these challenges with the agency, and did not want to be encumbered by the realities. But I say reality because it is recognized that limited funds is obviously a reality in this conversation. We were asked, and I was asked specifically many times, what does this agency need to address our increasingly complex wildfire condition across Oregon's landscape? Many occasions, many late-night phone calls, but that question has been before us, and the work to date in this framework represents the collective wisdom in terms of consideration to answer that question. We recognize that prioritization of this framework is the next step, and we'll engage with our key stakeholders, landowners, cooperators, the governor's office, and conservation stakeholder groups have all asked us to prioritize this work. It was clearly stated that that effort needs to be done, and this request and the FTE capacity at the top of this list to reduce the strain on our people is absolutely our priority in this conversation. The four components I'll speak to within the FTE is not laid out in priority order, and we'll speak to that. Within the FTE request, I've broken out categories, again, not in priority order, to highlight the FTE considerations across all programs within the agency. The nine positions in agency administration are distributed accordingly to our greatest workload needs, such as finance, as mentioned previously, and information technologies to support our advancing wildfire technology opportunities to reduce the risk of wildfire. State forests and private forests were discussed earlier regarding their critical role in large fire support. We see a nexus to state forests with implementing GNA and establishing wildland fire urban interface foresters and private forests to support fire adapted communities. These positions may resonate with many in this room as aligned with the tenets of the cohesive wildfire strategy that identifies response, resilient landscapes, and fire adapted communities as components of a comprehensive wildfire protection system. So that's to the point of where are we at with investing in the mitigation components of this challenge. The additional fire protection system investments total $13.4 million. If you're doing the math, the additional severity builds on a successful program most recently expanded in 2013 with the passage of the Wildfire Protection Act. The $4.2 million, again, a one-time purchase investment that replaces our 414 Cessna that was recently sold after 37 years of service to the state. The $2.1 million training fund would formalize a comprehensive training system necessary to meet our current and future workforce needs. And the $1.5 million investment in agency type 2 20-person crew. This is an area that we do not have investments in and of growing interest to secure and maintain crew capacity during peak times, as reflected in our consistency in training and deploying the National Guard crews on fires. The next steps, I highlighted that we would return to the board in June with the agency's proposal and final consideration for the board to include in the agency request budget in July. I would offer to meet to all board members individually to walk through in more detail, as I recognize this is the first time you've seen a lot of this data and the framework for a proposal. We have meetings scheduled with stakeholder groups, and certainly more outreach is necessary in order to fine-tune and help prioritize the initiative. And with that, we do have time for discussion.
Questions or comments?
Yeah, just real quick. Is this biennial or annual cost?
Excellent. So this is biennial costs.
Thanks.
Question of the difference in the amount in the proposal regarding additional severity and the recommendation that was in the fire program review.
So the fire program review recommended $500,000 increments of investments for local contracting, as detailed here. $500,000 for additional helitack, which includes four seasonal FTE, and $500,000 for two single engine air tankers, the seats, which includes 0.5 seasonal FTE. That was an annual recommendation of the fire program review. This is a biennial number, so that $1.5 million annual equals three. The addition beyond the conversation at the fire program review is a recognition that our current air tanker under contract is closing for fire season 20. So we have a choice before us in fire season 20 to consider next generation air tankers, of which our current air tanker is not. It's not federally catted. And we are unable to fly that on federal lands to share those costs of that resource. And this number is bringing exposure to that conversation. That's an additional $1.3 million of severity across the biennium based on our request for information on contracts of next generation tankers. That's what that additional cost would look like.
Thank you. The other question I had related to the assignment of the 55 FTE. Did some very simple approximate math in my head based on some numbers you gave earlier, and it's looking like it's roughly a 5% FTE increase for state forests and a roughly 10% for private forests. And I was wondering what was driving the allocation of the FTE increase to specific programs?
Overall, the 55 FTE is actually a 6% increase to the agency's FTE overall. Specific to the programs, what drove the state forests was analysis, looking at state forests and what they contributed to the fire program. In 2015, for example, 30,000 hours were applied to fire protection within a four-month period, and 121 employees participated in the fire program. And when you did the math, that was 13.3 FTE equivalent dedicated to fire. So checking the data in terms of justification to reinvest and rebalance the fire borrowing issue, the data supported that number. When we looked at operationally where we want, where those folks could be deployed, certainly this is where we have a nexus, we believe, into the GNA, and we'll seek consider the GNA dollars to help offset some of those costs. So early consideration on how to diversify the funding ask. For private forests, 12 positions, and I mentioned the wildland urban interface positions and concept. This would be the private forest positions dedicated to that arena. And we have 12 protection districts with wildland urban interface challenges. So that was a key driver for that component. And then the fire protection positions, the financials, prevention, training, and aviation were the drivers on where to put capacity, and that came from recommendations of both fire program review and the Secretary of State audit in those categories. And I've added South Fork in recognition that as state forests reduces its investment in South Fork Forestry Camp, we are losing crew availability from there, and it's a question of investing in the crew leadership there to maintain capacity for fire protection at that level. We studied the numbers, and we use about 20% of the capacity for hours worked out of that South Fork camp, and these dollars, that investment reflects that investment. And currently, we're not investing in that. It's all state forest dollars in terms of their readiness, and we just pull them out on an as-needed basis. The admin components, I mentioned the IT and finance, but we looked at all the components of the agency and asked where is tension in the system, and that's where those positions would derive from. And again, we're still working to define these positions and prioritize these positions. We'll bring that back, obviously, in June.
The other thing that we looked at was not only how do they fit within the divisions, but where do they fit within a third incident management team. And so we thought about the roles and the levels of these people, or what would be the skill sets, and how do those skill sets match up with the skill sets of an IMT. So we're thinking strategically and trying to match that up as well. One of the key Secretary of State audit recommendations, or our response to that, was strategic workforce planning. Mm-hmm. We've been doing it relatively heuristically. We've been doing fairly well at maintaining qualifications for incident management teams. But I think as we go forward, even with this increase, we're going to have to be much more strategic in ensuring that we have people in the pipeline trained up to step into those incident management teams as those turn over. Mm-hmm. There's less and less slack in the system, and we're thinking, so when we're thinking about this policy option package, we're thinking about not only contribution to the other agency work, but contribution to our incident management teams.
Mm-hmm. I assume that means that theoretically, if this were to be approved by the legislature as currently drafted, which I understand is a huge assumption, but we'll be looking to fly positions for 55 new folks, and that you will be defining your job description not only in terms of their responsibilities for the divisions they're going to, but the slots that you're hoping they will be filling on the incident command team. Because incident command characteristics could theoretically be held by anyone employed in any of the divisions.
Correct.
But if you laid them out with that understanding in mind of what you're needing to build a new incident command team, is that going to be part of the job announcements?
Being part of the fire program is part of everybody's job at ODF.
Yeah, it sounds like you're looking for specific.
I don't know if we need to do that within the job descriptions, because it's really not the job description itself, it's the skill sets that those people have.
Right.
And so we're thinking in that way, but I don't think
it's
you can count, you know,
something.
What we'll do is as we look for people with particular skill sets and we'll direct them into logistics if they have one skill set somewhere else, and then their interest as well.
Right.
But we're thinking about both aspects as we develop this.
I think that's a great question. And to be clear about that, we couldn't hire 55 people and then put them on our incident management teams.
Right.
But these are the folks in the pipeline to develop that system and stay at home to allow the person who we do have that skill set and availability to move on up into the incident management team positions, for example. So the one IT position, there's already folks in the pipeline who are trained up to support teams.
That helps explain how you allocate.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
Are you planning to do, I mean, that, if I was trying to provide a short summary to this, in essence, we're trying to maintain and prepare, maintain our initial attack success moving forward in a future where we're anticipating more fires, more complex fires, and be prepared for that, and in so doing, help control costs and the wear and tear on the department and the staff. I'm curious if we've and that's just a quick summary in my head, but I'm curious if we've also begun to outline the impact, the benefit, the value to the rest of the departments from this. What can we expect to see as a result of this to state forest management, to private forest, et cetera?
We've thought about that in the development and the allocation of those positions, but we're also thinking about that in the other aspects of what you were mentioning, the other recommendations, increasing forest resilience, improving fire adapted to communities, and there's some logical connections with the wild and urban interface foresters. It's been a concept we've talked about a lot. That came up at the fire summit as being a critical position. We've been arguing for those positions for several biennials about how critical those are, not only for forest practices in the urban interface, but also fire adapted communities. And we've just not gotten traction when we've presented them as silos in the past. And so it is an ambitious thing to say we're talking about, this is a Department of Forestry. We happen to be organized across some divisions, but this is really about the Department of Forestry and what our needs. So, yeah, we've thought about those workloads, and they do match up with some of the workload needs in state forest. And
but you'll be articulating some of those benefits, too?
Yeah. And that's one of the areas, you know, people like fire a lot in a strange sort of way. But so the conversation tends to go there, and Doug and I have talked about the need to really emphasize the other part of the Secretary of State, which is maintaining our other core business.
Sybil.
I have one question and a request. So I was also wondering about the insurance. So is there a chance we could get a break on our insurance or some kind of benefits from our insurance if the state invests more heavily in personnel and everything, or is that dangerous for us to go to the insurance company and say, here's what we're doing, and then they might then reanalyze what things are doing? Or I'm just curious about that side of things, and then I had a request that's different from that. So.
Okay.
We went to London this last year to make the argument that we were still in good risk, and we will continue to make that argument, and we did. We were successful in maintaining that relationship. It's an interesting insurance policy because there's no way to really predict it. But I think you know, that our continued improvement in investment that will certainly help in terms of maintaining that relationship. And if we can help lower costs in the future, that'll help our premium come down. Right now, I think the primary driver is rebalancing the payment. You know, we're way ahead now, and they're recovering. And so, but I don't think it will, you know, will hurt us either.
Yeah, so it might be a long-term benefit, but not tangible right now.
And then we had a testimony about the Oregon State University Fire Summit before it was going to happen. It sounds like there's a report that's going to come out. Can that be shared with the board members if it's out or when it's going to come out?
Yeah, there was a delay for some unknown to me reason. And so I have not seen it, but it's supposed to be coming out shortly.
Correct.
Okay, great. Oh, yeah. Nils, you're all over it?
I mean, it hasn't come out yet. There were other issues at the College of Forestry that prevented the timely completion of that report, but we're expecting it.
And we'll share it with you, this even when like you're not a board member.
Oh, thank you. Maybe you'll still talk to me afterwards.
Yeah. we do have some public testimony on this. So Jim James from the Small Woodlands Association.
That's going to work. Can you hear me? Chair Amundson, State Forester Doherty, Board of Forestry. My name is Jim James. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, and I'm here today speaking on behalf of the forest landowner community and the forest operators. You'll notice on my written testimony there's the decal or the logos for OSWA, OFIC, and Associated Oregon Loggers. And let me start by saying that the Oregon Department of Forestry's approach to protecting private, state, county, and west side BLM forests using their militia concept is a program that works very well with the partnership that it has with the landowner community. It can be very effective in the operator and landowner partnerships and is the best in the country. However, issues associated with federal forest policies create some big challenges that need to be addressed when they conflict with protecting private forest lands in our state. How to staff fire season when they conflict with the federal forest policies is an issue that must be addressed. With the most recent fire season, there is no doubt that the Department of Forestry needs some additional staffing during fire season to meet its obligations to Oregon's forest owners with significant funding for firefighting expenses. Landowners contribute in-kind investments, and they also fund for fire protection. They also suffer the natural resource losses during a fire. Oregon forest owners pay more firefighting expenses by far than any other state in the union. The owner-operator community appreciates the department's outreach to get support for their plans to address their recent staffing shortfall during fire season. We agree that not having access to a third ODF fire incident management team during fire season is not acceptable. At this time, we can support some, but not all of the department's original ideas, and look forward to working with the department to find solutions that provide the department with adequate staffing to meet the obligations without increasing landowner risks and costs. All options to increase staff during fire season must be evaluated. We support the concept that all Oregonians will benefit from these changes, and an additional funding needs to come from the general fund. This is an important issue for both the department and the landowner-operator community. While we fully respect the immediacy of the department's own board and budget timelines, the fire program is a priority for landowners and one we're not willing to shortchange to meet process deadlines. We look forward to engaging with the department once we have identified workable solutions we can support. Thank you for the department for their open and candid discussions, and I believe there are solutions that we can find and support. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions or comments? So the timeline that you've seen for us to act is one we have to, you know.
Yeah. And we recognize that timeline. This is a complex issue, and we want to get it right.
Right.
And so.
Do you see a problem working within that timeline to as you consider the various options for?
I hope the answer to that question is no. But I don't. This is really a complex issue, and I will share one of our concerns is that private landowners already contribute more to fire protection in Oregon than any other state in the union. And because the legislature is involved in this process, I'm not sure I trust them very well to not try to pass some of this cost on to landowners. I mean, just be frank about that. And we have a tradition of doing that, and we think we pay our fair share, and we're glad to do it. But we want to make sure that whatever recommendations come out don't create a situation where down the road our costs go up considerably without the benefit of fire protection that we would be paying for. So that's one of our concerns.
Well, we'll have both in June and July more discussion at the board level, and I hope you and the other pieces of the landowner community.
Yeah, well, and we've expressed to the farmer, we're fully engaged in this process. We want to find the right solution.
Thank you. Anything else? All right. Thanks.